Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Charlie Baker.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Obviously, the today's show overshadowed by the sad death of John Motson, who's someone that Andy and I were very fortunate to spend a couple of days a week with for two seasons when he would come in and preview and review the Premier League weekend. So Andy joined us, broke his holiday to join us because he wanted to pay his tribute to Motty today, as did Jonathan Pearce, expressly asked to come on and pay his respects, the fine BBC commentator, a man who knew him well. It was a lovely tribute from Jonathan. Away from that, of course, we had the boxing to look forward to. Don McGuinness was live from Saudi, and joined us.
Hotting up out there, hotting up for the fight, Paul. I didn't know that wasn't a pun on
this
the detail
live on
there,
TalkSport, of course, on Sunday. Jake Paul versus Tommy Fury. So I think that should just about do. Here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Charlie.
Good afternoon, Paul. Very, very sad day.
Yeah, very absolutely.
Sad day if you're in, if you like broadcasting, if you like football, if you like life, you know.
Yeah, it's incredibly sad. And we're going to reflect on Motty's life over the next 3 hours. And joining us now, breaking off from his holiday, to chat about Motty, because Andy and I were very privileged to spend a couple of years working with Motty twice a week, a regular guest on a Monday and a Friday, to reflect on the football weekend and look ahead to the next one. Andy joins us now. Hi, Andy.
Hey, Andy.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Charlie. Yeah, what a sad day. I can't believe I woke up this morning to hear the news, and like everybody else, I'm absolutely gutted. I really am. He was a lovely, lovely man. I so enjoyed working with him, and you know, we had fun with him, Paul, didn't we?
We did, and you saw that thing about, you know, felt prepared to fail. And even though by osmosis he knew loads about football and he soaked all this stuff up and he had everything at his fingertips, he would offer, he'd get in touch with us, wouldn't he, on the morning of a show and say, I want to talk about this, I want to talk about that, are we going to be, he wanted everything to be right when he came on air. He didn't just rock up and do it. Well, that probably won't come as a surprise when you look at his commentary notes, which people will be aware of, I'm sure.
Absolutely, the meticulous presentation, aided by dear Anne, of course, his wife, who helped him much. And I just cherish certain moments going through my photo gallery, finding photos from Cheltenham. It wasn't just football. He was always a regular guest at Cheltenham, and he let me wear his sheepskin one year, which really a great honour. He's just such a lovely man. And it's hard to believe. It's hard to take in, really. I also cherish, do you remember, because when he first came on the show, Paul, he wasn't quite sure how to deal with us and we to deal with him. And then after a few weeks, it worked really well. And he just gave us his book. And I cherish the note he wrote in his book about how welcome we'd made him and how he'd helped. You know, from a man like that, it was a great honour.
No, it was humbling. And that was the interesting thing, was it? He'd spent all those years in the world of commentary and he'd retired from the world of commentary, and TalkSport approached him to do this show. And we knew him a bit through meeting him at Cheltenham. And just over the years, you came across him on Fantasy Football. I did on on 90 Minutes. So we kind of knew each other to say hello to and to chat to at racing, but we'd never worked together. And there was that little bit, I don't want to call it insecurity, but fear of the unknown. He'd not worked with us. And as you say, it did take a few weeks for us to settle in, but it was just, I mean, I was saying to Jim and to Alex earlier on, Charlie, it was like you'd have these, you know, the first couple of times we did it, there's just these pinch yourself moments.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, you're kind of sitting there and you're not really listening because you're thinking, it's Motti, it's John Motson, it's the Ronnie Radford commentary, it's still Ricky Veer, it's all these moments of my life.
If you're a football fan or a sports fan, he's the soundtrack to your life, isn't it? You know, he sort of pops up in your brain when you're. When you were me and you're playing football in the playground and you're commentating on yourself, you're doing it in his voice, you know.
Yeah.
So to actually meet him a couple of times and for him to say my name was a real thrill, a real privilege, you know. Just and also, I think he's a good example of being yourself. He was never overly slick, but he was always knowledgeable.
Yeah.
And he was always himself and full of character, you know, and that makes him one of the greats, you know.
Because I particularly recall a wonderful show we did with him in the pandemic when there was no football. Yeah. Those shows were really, really hard to do. And he came in and just, it was a nostalgia fest, but he was absolutely wonderful. And I really enjoyed that show. I remember it pretty well. So you probably do too as well, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. I do. And I did a live show with him in a theatre in London. And we spent a kind of couple of hours just pulling all the stories that he wanted to tell in that show together. So I made lots and lots of notes, and I found the notes today about some of the weird and wonderful things that he used to do in his early days. David Coleman was he was kind of slightly in fear and in awe of David Coleman, another one of the greats, of course. But he recommended John to the BBC. He heard him do some work on BBC Radio. He started out in radio. So it was kind of coming back to radio Motti, which is, I think, why he enjoyed it. But the BBC, they took on board what David Coleman said, but they still wanted him to do a dummy commentary on a game that was never broadcast. And if he did a good job, they'd give him more work. So obviously he did. And the game against Hereford, when he talked about that, Andy, he was very aware it was a sliding doors moment for him, because he was supposed to have, he said to me, they said, you'll probably get 3 or 4 minutes at the end of match of the day, because the feeling was this replay was going to be a routine win for Newcastle. Yeah. You know, a great side at that time. And, of course, it was the biggest story. It was the first match on Match of the Day.
Yeah.
And he travelled to the game with some of the Hereford players, because Ricky George, who scored one of the goals, afterwards was interviewed by one of the newspapers. And they said to him, how did you get here? Meaning, what was your route to this round of the competition? He said, I came in the car with Motti. But, and he said he went back afterwards and went round to one of the Hereford players' houses to watch Match of the Day.
Oh,
had a couple of cans and watched Match of the Day to watch it all back afterwards. And they drove all the way back to where he lived over in sort of North London to watch the games.
The pressure of those big moments never seemed to get to him. You know, he commentated on those big England games, you know, Euro 96, England, Scotland.
Yeah.
We all know that the crazy gang have beaten the Culture Club, you know.
Yeah.
Coming up with those lines in those pressure moments, it's amazing.
And he always told us, Andy, didn't he, that they weren't rehearsed. There is a feeling that people say, well, you've got that one in your locker, John. But he always claimed, I would always believe him, he said no, it just came to me at the spur of the moment. There was one just now I was listening to, is Michael Owen getting his hat trick against Germany in the 5-0, and it's clever, and he says, oh, this is getting better and better and better, you know, the three betters for the hat tricks, little things like that, as we said, were set him apart, I think.
And his relationship with Barry Davis, I mean, people thought they were great adversaries, but of course they were rivals. They were rivals for the big, big games, but they were also pretty close, weren't they, at the end?
No, absolutely they were. And Barry did a documentary, didn't he, when he retired a few years back on the Beeb, and talked about that rivalry.
Yeah.
Although I did once speak to the guy who was the producer on the World Cup coverage when he had to tell Motti they were giving Barry the final. I mean, he said it's the toughest thing he's ever had to do. I mean, John had done all the finals for such a long time. And then he said, you know, that difficulty of kind of managing that, because they all of them wanted the top games all of the time.
I mean, those two are the same. It's like having Messi and Ronaldo at the same time, or Rafa Nadal and Roger Federer at the same time. To have two greats like that, the same time. Yeah. Incredible.
So, yeah, I mean, as I said, we wanted to, this afternoon's show to be as much of a kind of celebration of Motley and what he did, because, he, as I said, he was the soundtrack of our lives, wasn't he? And I think he transcended the ages. I mean, we remember him very early on in around that sort of 71 period. It's hard to believe he didn't do a live commentary till that's 1971. He gets his first big break. He doesn't do his first live commentary on a football match for 90 minutes till 1977, the FA Cup final. Amazing. So it just highlights on Match of the Day for all that period. We, you know, people now got so used to seeing 90 minutes live games all the time, Andy. They didn't realise it, that wasn't the way football was consumed then. Have we lost him? Hello, Andy.
I was delighted to find out that his dad had taken him to Chelsea when he was young.
So. That's right.
He never let that show whoever he supported. So he
well, everybody used to think he was a Tottenham fan.
Yeah,
but he told me he wasn't, much disappointed as I was. First game he ever went to was with his dad. He was born in Salford, Motty, which not a lot of people realise. And he went and watched Manchester United. That was the first game. But he was a regular at Watford, wasn't he? He'd often come in on a Friday, and he took in a game. You know, he was a real enthusiast. And we'd say, "You're going to a game tomorrow, Motty?" And invariably say, "Yeah, I'm off to Watford," because it was quite close to home, and they always invited him along. But he'd take in different games, wouldn't he, Andy? Say, get off to Oxford, or he'd just be a guest there. I mean, he was always very welcome in the director's boxes all around the game.
One of the memories I've got of him as well is that famous shot of him standing in the snow reporting what game it was. But that's a really memorable image of him as well.
Well, funny enough, Stuart Roy Clark, who took that memorable photo, is going to join us later on, because the sheepskin did become quite iconic. We've got a little sheepskin story for you later on. And as Andy said, we'll send that picture out.
Lovely.
When we saw him at Cheltenham before he started doing the shows, and he said, can I try it on, Motty? They weighed a ton, didn't they, Andy? They were really heavy coats.
It was as long as me. That's the mad thing about it.
And they were such a trademark. He'd wear them in the kind of weather you didn't really need a suit jacket.
Yeah.
And he'd have a dab on, you know. Because I think, John, why are you
wearing...
Used
car dealer chic, wasn't it?
Why are you wearing this? But they were such... I mean, he had this whole collection of them. Lots and lots of different colours.
Fantastic.
Anyway, we'll come back to that. Stuart Roy Clark joins us a little bit later on. Gary Newbon's with us shortly. Andy, thank you. We'll catch up with you soon. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thanks.
Take care. That's Andy Jacobs, of course, who'll be returning, not next week, but the week after his break.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
We're reflecting on the sad news this morning that John Motson has passed away, aged just 77. He was with us in the studio only a year or so ago on a regular basis, and it was always great to see him.
Just said off air, It's when people die like this, it's always a shock, and you can only imagine him walking into the studio and hello boys and then chatting to you about the weekend's games and excited, and so he's always so enthusiastic.
It's that moment, isn't it, when you think you're not going to have that conversation. I mean, as I said, we just mentioned Cheltenham, and Andy and I were saying we talk about the guests we'd like to see at Cheltenham. We were chatting to our production team saying, well, we'll see Motty. Motty's always there. Yeah. So you're going to be with us at Cheltenham, and you're out and about, and you probably would have caught up with Motty and had a chat as well. So it's hard to believe he's not going to be there. Because I'll tell you what, before we pay a few more tributes, let's take you back to 2019 at Cheltenham, because John loved racing. I'm sure we could have easily got someone on today from the world of racing because he went to a lot of meetings. He absolutely loved the Cheltenham Festival and would go... certainly in the early days, for the whole week. And we'd often see him there. And this is back in 2019, and Motty was telling us about how he got into his other great love, horse racing.
My hotel last night was buzzing with people who thought they knew what was going to win.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're making notes and you're thinking, well, I'll rule that one out and I'll leave that one in. But in the end, you know, it's fun and it's not my living. It's not racing. It's never been my main sport. But as a fan, I love Cheltenham and I love being here.
Did you ever try a racing commentary?
No. I was once persuaded. Who was that couple that were trying out things as a partnership? Hale and Pace.
Oh, yeah.
Is that right, Andy?
Yeah, Hale and Pace.
They wanted to do a commentary, and they came to me for advice on it. And I said, well, don't ask me for advice on racing commentary. I'll help you with football.
Yeah, of course.
And they actually, as part of that series, which you obviously remember, Andy, they did do a racing commentary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's tough. Rupert Bell makes it sound easy, of course, but they're doing a lot of it through binoculars. It's very difficult.
Well, I sat next to Sir Peter O'Sullivan, one of my great heroes.
Yeah.
At Goodwood many years ago with his binoculars, and I thought, even with binoculars, how is he doing this?
I know, and if you think that.
You know, I thought 22 footballers were hard. Well, it was 22 in those days, by the way, not 30. But racing, and to call them, because every punter wants to hear his horse mentioned, doesn't he?
That's true.
Even if he's in fifth place or something.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
And the concentration required by the racing I think it's the hardest. I've said it before. I think it's the hardest sport to do.
He had a wonderful voice, Sir Peter O'Sullivan. And when you come in here first thing in the morning, they often play the old commentary.
Yeah. Do you know what he said to me that day at Goodwood? He said, "Dear boy, the only commentary you'll be remembered for is the one you got wrong."
That's probably right.
Well, that's not fair. I would
know. No, probably not. But you know, he was just telling me that we were on a precipice. You know,
that's back in 2019 at Cheltenham. Mm. Talking of that, I remember Motti telling me that amongst all the sports, he didn't do racing, as he said. He did tennis at Wimbledon. He did boxing commentary in the past, and in the Olympics, they roped him in the Olympics. I don't know if he did this off tube or he was there, but he said that he did the Greco-Roman wrestling.
Wow.
But he got the two fighters' leotards mixed up and gave the medal to the wrong country, apparently.
Only two people in that, he has to remember.
He had a story about Wimbledon. He was doing Wimbledon tennis commentary, and Jack Nicholson came into the commentary box and sat down and just started co-commentating with him.
Wow.
And at one point shouted, "Give him the score, Johnny."
Here's Johnny. Yeah. I met, this is from Phil Barwa. We've had lots of nice texts and tweets from people. From Phil Barwise, "I met you and Motti at his audience with back in 2019. You mentioned it earlier, Paul. Yeah. I didn't know who I was most looking forward to meeting the most. What an old school gent. Had time for everyone there. It was like losing a favourite uncle. Rest in peace."
No, I think that's been a kind of common theme of the tributes that have been coming in. You always think of Motti in the blizzard with his sheepskin. And also that commentary for Spurs, and still Ricky Veer, says Dave. Yeah, we'll be chatting to the man who took that famous photograph of Motti in that blizzard at Wickham, that set him on the road to that trademark sheepskin coat. We'll chat to Stuart Roy Clark a little bit.
He had a few things, didn't he? It sort of built this sort of legend around him, didn't he? You know, he had the Ronnie Radford goal, and then the sheepskin in the snow. All these things that put him at the centre of football.
It had to be the right sheepskin. I'll tell you
really?
A story.
I'd like
bit
to know
later
about
on.
That. Yeah,
had to be the attention to detail. Okay. We'll tell you more about that when we chat to the photographer later on.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Owen sprinting away to the left here against Lucio. Michael Owen for England. It's a great chance, and he scored. Michael Owen against Brazil in the World Cup.
I mean, he was John Motson. That is his name, but we all knew him as Motti. He had no ego. This is the time to recognise what John Motson, what Motti was. The way he went about learning to become one of the top commentators, one of the most recognised, one of the greatest.
Of course, Bob Wilson there paying tribute to his former colleague and friend John Motson, who died earlier on today. And it was interesting, Clive Tildesley earlier on with Jim and Alex talking about how he wanted to be Motti.
Yeah.
You know, and even you look at Clive's notes, he admits there are similarities in the way he does his prep. I'm sure that's true of a lot of commentators.
Yeah.
And joining us now is another fine commentator of the BBC. Jonathan Pearce joins us. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Jonathan. Not quite there at the moment.
There we are. Hello, Jonathan. Can you hear us?
I think Gary Newborn made a good point earlier on about there being a lot more media now, so there are a lot more commentators. Whereas, I think when I was growing up, especially, and you had sort of two or three channels, not all showing football, the cream had to rise to the top because there weren't actually too many opportunities.
Also, then you didn't have commentaries on all of the games. You didn't have highlights of all of the games, so there were fewer commentators needed. So there were a select band. I think JP can join us. Hi, Jonathan.
Hiya, how are you doing, boys?
Yeah, good. Thank you, good. Thank you. Incredibly sad news today. You work with Motti and knew him well over the years. And we just saying Clive admitting that he wanted to be Motti as a young lad and said, I stole a lot from him. Do you think a lot of great commentators did?
I think so. I mean, I would say to any commentator coming into the game now, Paul, just be yourself. And that's something that Motti said to me at a very early age. I used to work with my dad up on the gantries at Bristol City filming the games for analysis purposes. We were one of the first clubs to do it. And that's where I bumped into Motti for the first time in the early sort of mid-70s. And I said that's what I wanted to do. And he gave me advice then. And one of the first words of advice he said was be yourself. Mm. And over the years, he passed on so many pieces of advice to me, not as a sort of a schoolmaster style, but, you know, in social environments, and we had many of them over the years, I can tell you, with him. He'd had a couple of words, and not necessarily for the radio commentary, because I had my own style on that, but when I crossed over into television, you know, he was always there with a word. We used to travel to away games. This is pre-internet days, and you know, you'd have to sort of forage for information on teams. They weren't well known, as you've just said. Games weren't on television like they are now, and so you'd have to forage for information. And we did so with local journalists or local fans of the other club, and we'd pitch up at training sessions, just John and me, John in his sheepskin, and myself in an old, some sort of old anorak, anyway. And we'd ask these questions, you know, and we cobble together our notes, and we compare notes, and we swap information. And that was one thing he taught me. You can't ever do enough preparation, but be careful how you use it. If you have to leave out 95% of it, then do so. And he said, you know, make sure you have the right words for the right occasion. John was the master of the big word for the right occasion, whether it's Ronnie Radford or whether it's you know, great iconic commentary moments that he had, World Cup finals or the Crazy Gang beats the Culture Club and all this sort of stuff. He was the master of the word, and he had the big words for the big moments, and he was sort of peerless like that, I think. And all of it was off the cuff. It wasn't made up. You can tell the ones who contrive lines like that because it sounds prepared, and he never did that. And he used to pass on his wisdom in many ways. And one of the things he told me, chaps, was, you know, the importance of remembering that I was a journalist, and he was a trained written journalist, and I had my training, and you could hear it in his commentaries. Mm. You could hear the news value he had. In that way, he was a trailblazer, I think. And I remember that from him. And the importance of contacts. John would say, always make sure you can get information on the team by speaking to the people involved. So he would go into the manager's offices beforehand, one of a rare breed who's been allowed to do that. And I would copy. You said, do people copy him? Well, I use that. You know, I used to go into managers' offices. Martin does, still does to this day. Clive does, I think. But very few of the new ones coming through do that. And it's very important for them to forage those contacts. John was a master at it. Wherever we went, on those training grounds in Eastern Europe or far-flung places around the world, people knew Motti. Mm. So he was always welcome wherever he went, you know. And he had his foibles. It was amazing. John used to go into what he called the zone.
Yeah.
And it was about 10 minutes before a commentary started, and he'd line all his pens up immaculately. Old school, I'm the same. You know, I don't do it on an iPad or whatever. I have my written notes there, and so a lot of people do. Stevie Wilson does, and others as well. Jim Proudfoot, I think that's all handwritten. And, you know, maybe that comes from Motti, I don't know. We all had our styles of doing things. But he'd line up all his paper and his pencils and his pens, different colour pens. Woe betide anyone. Woe betide anyone who touched those pens or spoke to him when he was in the focus. He was that focused on, that intent on doing it, on getting it right. And John always wanted to get it right. The right words for the right moment, the right commentary for the occasion. And he was, you know, I've said today already, he led, we followed. He was the doyen, he was the mentor for me. He was a good friend, and I shall miss him dearly, and I was devastated by the news this morning. He was the voice of our generation, and he was, along with the Peter Alices and Peter O'Sullivans and John Arletts, just a master of his trade.
And somebody was still in love with a game. As I said, Andy and I would say to him every Friday, what game are you taking in this weekend, Motti? And he'd always be at a match. Often locally, you know, he'd be at Watford, or he might go to Barnet, or he might go to Oxford or whatever, or he'd go to Palace. He'd be a guest of... Because, as you said, he knew everybody, John. But it was great that he always still loved the game. I saw Tim Vine, the comedian, saying he saw him at Sutton just 2 weeks ago and had a chat with him there. So, he couldn't leave the game behind. He had to take in a game. Even if he wasn't commentating on it, he wanted to be in and around it all the time.
Well, he loved the history of it, the romance of it. He loved the stories. He loved the storytellers. He was a great raconteur himself. So wherever he went, he'd listen to the stories from the boardroom at Sutton, wherever he was. And another thing I'd say about John is when and he taught me the importance of this as well. Say, for example, he was doing, I don't know, Harrogate against a Premier League team in the FA Cup. He would make sure he went to see Harrogate two or three times beforehand. Goodness. Midweek games. He'd go all over the place, you know. And he was scrupulous in that. And he was great company. In 2010, he went out to the World Cup in South Africa. He wasn't a commentator then. He went out as a sort of a historian to put it all into perspective, you know. So he had downtime between games, and I spent many an evening in a rooftop bar in a hotel in Cape Town, just listening to John Motson, listening to that voice, listening to his stories. Wasn't I extraordinarily lucky?
Yeah. Well said, Jonathan. Lovely to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Privilege. Great man he was.
Jonathan Pearce there, reminiscing on John Motson.
I think that's one of the things. You felt like he was a fan with a microphone. Well, he made it sound like that, and we know how hard that is to make it sound like that. But also that he was aware of the privileged position he was in to be at these big games, you know, that always came across.
I now wish I'd recorded that conversation when we had that couple of hours to build up to this live show we did and talk through the stuff he'd want to discuss, and really wish I made notes. I've got the notes here, but I really wish I'd recorded it now for posterity, because it was really interesting. But Sam Matterface did have a great chat with Motti. It was a Motti Meets, which I think
TalkSport 2 have played it out earlier on.
I'm sure it'll be available on Listen Again. Two fine commentators having a conversation about the art of commentary, so go and check that out. John will add some great war stories. Cluffy used to love the Cluffy stories. We'll come on to those later on, because he had a great relationship with Brian, but they would fall out now and again, and there's a quite infamous TV interview that he did when Brian was taking him on, but he loved to do the Cluffy impression.
I think I heard that.
Maybe we'll come on to some of those stories a little bit later on. It's Paul Hawksby and Charlie Baker here on TalkSport.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
We
puts him down.
Losing never comes into my head, and especially about Jake Paul. No matter how many times me and him has been scheduled to fight, never, ever once has it ever come into my head that he's going to beat me.
And now he's down again, and that is it. Jake Paul with a first-round destruction.
You know, he's unprofessional. He's a flake. He's not a serious businessman. He's not a serious fighter.
Yes, Sunday night we bring you the fight between Jake Paul and Tommy Fury. There's been a lot of build-up to this one, of course. A lot of trash talk.
Yeah.
And we'll find out.
I'm into it, but we're buying it. We're going to watch it.
Yeah. Well, you don't need to buy it. You can listen for free.
I'll be watching it and then having it on the radio.
Well, you'll hear the dulcet tones of our next guest, your commentator for the fight, Dom McGuinness. Hi, Dom.
How are you doing, fellas? Yeah, I'm talking to you as well from the press conference venue, which is going to start in just less than an hour. But it's been a busy, busy, less than 24 hours that the TalkSport team's been in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia as well. But we've just actually hot-tailed it across town from the Four Seasons, where Spencer Oliver's just done a fabulous exclusive with Jake Paul in his hotel suite. And I can tell you as well, that hotel is currently the home of a certain Cristiano Ronaldo as well. So he's mixing in good company, Jake Paul. Where we are, we've already sat down with Tommy Fury as well. It's been really interesting, actually, looking at the two fellas and the body language of both of them as they go into what is the biggest night of their boxing lives.
Yeah, Spencer Oliver caught up with Jake Paul. As you say, listen, we're going to bring you a little excerpt of that now. He caught up with him ahead of the fight, and Spencer asked Jake Paul about a potential fight against Carl Froch.
He sounds desperate for money, like, really. It's like a money play. Like, he's already envisioning that we're fighting in his head and trying to get the bag. He probably, like most boxers, spent his money improperly. Let Carl fight Anderson Silva. If you can get through Anderson Silva, which I bet you can't, then me and you will fight. I guarantee it. Fight Anderson Silva first. Prove yourself, because you're older. Let's see if you can actually still bang. I'm going to get through Tommy. You get through Anderson, and that'll be a big fight. But as far as I'm concerned, not a single person in the United States knows your name. So fighting Anderson Silva would help you build up that reputation, and that's my offer.
So you've been through the UFC, the ex-champions of the UFC, and you believe you can do the same against the likes of, like, Carl Froch?
For sure. I just don't even think he can get through Anderson Silva. And him versus Anderson's a big fight. But if he proves that he could do that, I put this on my word, I will fight him. No doubt. Guaranteed.
How desperate is Spencer to say that you're deluded, son?
But this guy is one of the best promoters, if not the best promoter of
great.
All time.
For business,
for making money, for everything. He's absolutely
incredible. I had absolutely no appetite
changing the game
for a fight between Carl Froch and Jake Paul until Jake Paul said what he just said. Now I can't wait to see it. So I suppose it's working, Dom.
Yeah, great business.
Listen, you just hit the nail on the head, really. That's why we're all in Saudi Arabia, because, you know, you're talking about Tommy Fury being a man that has had an amateur boxing career. Not a great one, obviously, not a vast one, but he's had an amateur boxing career. He's unbeaten as a pro, 8 fights, 4 inside the distance. He's fighting a guy that's only been in with an ex-NBA, ex-YouTuber, ex-MMA, and older guys as well. But we're all here because we're fascinated by this. Now, whether you're a boxing purist, a casual fan, or whether you just like the crossover stuff, you're here because it's like, what is going to happen here? Jake Paul, you sit in the room as we've just been sat in the room, and there's plenty more gems from that interview with Spencer, by the way, not just the Carl Froch one, so stay tuned. But you sit there and you look at Jake Paul talking the way he does, and you believe in every word he says. We sat down with Tommy Fury. I've never seen him more relaxed, more confident, and again, listen out for the interview because he speaks so well about what he's going to do. He's in absolutely under no illusions. He's going to knock out Jake Paul early in this fight. So you're watching it all. And again, they've both been promoting it so well. I mean, Jake Paul is an incredible promoter. I mean, we've seen that in the way that he works with professional fighters like Amanda Serrano and other fighters that he's done very well for. So it's got us all here and everybody talking about it. And Jake Paul's still the favourite, yet Tommy's the boxer. So work that out.
Dom, when you meet Jake Paul, when you meet boxers, which they often are in and out of talk sport, and they carry an air of menace, no matter how long they've been retired, they carry an air of weight and menace and darkness with them and violence with them. Does he carry that?
I would disagree with what you've just said, Charlie, because my experience of meeting fighters, I've found usually they're some of the most gentle and some of the most caring, nice people you could ever meet. When they get in the ring, they are totally different animals. Now, we're not talking about Mike Tyson, who incidentally is in Riyadh for this fight. You know, yeah, there are certain people that do carry that. But I've always found that most boxers are the best people you can meet. Now, Jake, again, was one of the nicest chaps you could meet. So, no, there's no menace. There's none of that. I mean, I've no doubt he means what he says in terms of he's going to try his very best to knock out Tommy Fury on Sunday night. But no, I don't get the menace. I don't get any darkness. But I rarely have seen that with fighters because I just think that they usually save the nastiness and the spite for in the ring and out of it, usually absolute gentlemen and women as well.
Maybe they don't like me.
Yeah, I think they've taken against you, Charlie. Funny enough, I'm quite a nice player, but I've got an air of menace when I'm around you. I do. It must be you. Who's got more to lose? I suppose on the face of it, it is Tommy Fury, isn't it? I mean, it's the Fury name he's taking in the ring. He's the boxer. He's had 8 fights. He's a pro boxer in against a guy who is new to the sport and has come through just, you know, a YouTube fighting and has clearly got better and better at it. But... Tommy's got far more to lose on the face of it, you would think.
Well, when you think that, you know, his brother Tyson saying that, you know, basically he can't come home if he doesn't win, when John Fury's saying Tommy's only here for a paid holiday, yeah, there's a lot of pressure. That's why I was really impressed, actually, with the demeanour of Tommy before and how relaxed and how super confident he is. Because, yes, no doubt about it, he's got the pressure on him. Jake Paul, you know, he's already reinvented himself a few times. He's a Disney star, he's this, that, and the other. Obviously, we know Tommy's had the celebrity background with Love Island and the influencer stuff as well. But no, I think obviously it would be so much worse, surely, for Tommy Fury. And Jake Paul will reinvent himself, no doubt about that, should he get beaten. But, you know, he's got absolutely no designs on that happening, that's for sure.
I like the idea of Tommy not coming home and celebrating his 60th birthday in Riyadh. And they're
still there.
70-year-old.
Him and Molly May.
70-year-old Tyson saying, "You're still not coming home, you dotter." Let me come home. I've been there for 30-odd years. You're not coming home.
If Mike Tyson's there, maybe that's who Jake Paul fights next.
Well, no,
I'm going to fight. Don't Mike Tyson. I think you're fine. That's a great. We all watch that.
He won't be calling him out in any time soon. And what sort of crowd are we expecting? What's the venue like? Have you popped along to the venue like?
Yeah, Dirio, which of course has seen the big fights before. You know, of course, the Brits have been over here, Joshua and everything else. But it's 6,500. It's outdoor. And what's really interesting as well, because obviously we've been running around today, crossing town and doing this, that, and the other. And when you're outside, it's very hot. It's far too hot for me. It's about 28, 29 degrees Celsius. What's that? That's late 80s, is it? I think in Fahrenheit or whatever. But then you everywhere you go otherwise, it's super air conditioned and all the rest of it. But outside at night, it's chilly. So on Sunday night, it's going to be actually, you know, a little bit chilly. It's certainly not going to be warm. It's not going to have any impact on the fight. There's not going to be any kind of heat to deal with, certainly from either guy's point of view. So, yeah, it's kind of it's jumper weather at night.
Well, we look forward to the fight. Yeah. All we would say is we want you to come home, as we do Tommy Fury. So just keep off the eggs at breakfast because we don't want them testing you at the airport, Dom, whatever happens. That's another bizarre story of the day, of course, isn't it? That one of the governing bodies...
Sorry to interrupt there, Paul, but as you speak, Mauricio Sulaiman, the president of the WBC, has just walked past us. And, of course, there is a WBC belt on the line, by the way, for this fight on Sunday night. There's a new Dariya belt, but he's just walked past. Obviously, Sulaiman, in terms of this fight, the controversial stuff that he's done is say that Jake Paul could have a ranking in the top 40 should he come through against Tommy Fury. But, of course, with the WBC and their investigation and clearing the Conor Benn situation, of course, that's been a talking point here, and I know it has been at home as well. And if we do catch up with Maurizio, of course, we'll try and grab him and get a word.
It's quite interesting that the idea of the world ranking has not played particularly well, even with Frank Warren, who we spoke with the other day, and certainly Gareth A. Davis as well. So does seem a bit of an odd one. But look, the interest is there. As Charlie's been telling us, his 15-year-old son can't wait. He's
can't
really
wait.
Looking
the only fight in town. Yeah. Absolutely loves it. All he can talk about.
Absolutely. You're dead right. You're dead right. And that's why, you know, again, there's so many ears are going to be on this for TalkSport. And remember, this is free on TalkSport as well. And we're going to have so much more coverage of fight night. It's going to be 7 o'clock on TalkSport 2, 9 o'clock for the main event on TalkSport, of course. But we've got programs. We've got live shows coming Friday, Saturday and Sunday from here. We've got all the, we've got the Fight Night podcast as well. So there's so much content that we're throwing your way as well. So make sure you get to the YouTube channel as well and subscribe to TalkSport Boxing YouTube channel. But yeah, it's it is fascinating. But as you say about the younger generation, I mean, I had it myself with my kids, and I think that they think I don't know where they think I'm most weekends or in the week when I'm working, but this is the only time that they've actually been really impressed that I'm going to meet Tommy Fury and Jake Paul. You know, I've been mixing with world champions and this, that, and the other. Yeah, whatever. Jake Paul, Tommy Fury, and then I get the big thumbs up. So it just tells you everything, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Cheers, Dom. Thanks very much.
All the best, lads.
Dom McGuinness is your commentator on Sunday evening. Yeah, Tommy Fury, Jake Paul, exclusively live on TalkSport this Sunday from 9 p.m. Following on from the Carabao Cup final, of course, Manchester United, Newcastle at 4:30. Yeah. And you can watch the fight press conference over on the TalkSport Boxing YouTube channel at 5 p.m. I imagine it'll be quite lively. But
is there an undercard, Paul? Do you know? Is it like other celebrities, like Beppe from EastEnders maybe Chico or...
Yeah.
You know, maybe they're fighting. I don't know who's on the undercard.
I don't know. I'll find out for you.
Thank you very much.
That's a fight I would like to see.
I'd like to know who's on the undercard, that's all. I don't know who's there.
Were you in EastEnders?
I was. Tim Reynolds. Bring back Tim Reynolds.
You never fell off a roof, did you?
No. Booked for 6 episodes, did 5. That's not true. It's not true.
How did you leave the street?
No, I'm still alive, Paul. Didn't leave in a black cab and I'm still alive.
Okay, not looking out the window of a tried black cab or falling off
tried
a roof.
Tried to kiss Ronnie. Oh, mortifying. She was having none of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was it,
yeah.
And that was you gone.
Bring back Tim Reynolds.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
I'm sure people will be heading their pilgrimage to this sad time to go and see Motti's sheepskin. As I said, attention to detail with Motley was all. And when we did the live show, the producer in this London theatre, the producer of the live show said, I've got this idea and I want to put a single spotlight on a sheepskin coat and then you and Motti will come on.
Lovely.
You know?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I think that's nice. That looked quite good. So we turn up to do the run through and we've not seen what they've done. And it's in the darkness, and he's kind of showing us how it's doing. And he puts the single spotlight on, but the producer has basically just gone and got a sheepskin coat, not the kind of the longer coats that Motti had. The long,
a bit more tailored as well, wasn't it?
This was like a kind of Del Boy sheepskin coat. You know what I mean? Yeah. Slightly shorter. Someone working on a market
sell you a Ford Sierra.
So John's gone into one, and he's saying, Paul, that's the wrong coat. He said, luckily, I've bought one with me.
Oh, fantastic.
So we can put my... I don't mind my one going up there. Yeah. But there was no way he was walking onto that stage...
a bad sheepskin.
With a David Jason-style sheepskin coat on a hanger with a single spotlight on it. They cost a lot of money. Yeah, I mean, they were a couple of grand each, I think, the coats.
I think about that photo.
They lasted for ages, he said. They would last him for a long time. Several row, I think they were.
You look at it and you feel cold. Yeah. Because he's in a warm coat, you feel warm. And, you know, and great art is all about how you feel, isn't it? About what it makes you feel. And I think if you've stood in the cold on a football terrace, you look at that picture and you go, oh, he's wearing the right coat.
Yeah.
He's got the right stuff on.
Absolutely.
Well done, Motti.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
I was saying I've been plundering a conversation I had with Motti before I did a live show with him in 2019. And we had a good chat. And a few nuggets, a little stories we would come on to. And there was really one weird one. He'd done a commentary around West Ham. And at the end of the commentary, I think it was only a highlights commentary on Match of the Day, but he'd said something that John Lyle, the then West Ham manager, didn't like.
Okay.
And then he saw him the following week in the car park, I think at Spurs, and was going to go up to him, as all the way all these guys did, ask what the team news was. And John Lyle said to him, you'll get nothing out of me, Motti. You're a bomberoo.
Wow.
So, Motti thought, well, that's probably some East London vernacular.
Yeah.
I'll look that up. And he said to me, to the day, this was 2019, I've never been able to work out. I've never forgotten what he called me.
But it was definitely
It was an insult. He wasn't happy.
A bomberoo.
He said, you're a bomberoo. So it's probably some old Billingsgate saying that he got from a distant uncle, with East London. But no, look, if you know.
Yeah, let us know.
But Motti never found out. He said, I would go up and ask people. I'd ask other Western. They say, what's a bomberoo?
What's a bomberoo?
Why are you
Nobody
asking,
knew.
Motti?
Nobody
because
knows.
John Lyle called me and it's bothering me. I want to know. I want to know what it means. He was always, I don't know if I can quite say that this time of day. I can clean it up. I remember Motti telling me that when you knew when you were in Cluffy's bad books, you turned up to do a Forest or a Derby game, and if you're in his good books for whatever reason, how are you, John, and all this, young man, and he'd do all that. But otherwise, he would shout down the corridor, "Oi, S-House!" that was his greeting, that what was he it. Said, from Cluffy, if you knew that you were going to get a bit of a mouthful.
There's some love in that as well, though,
so, yeah,
there, you know.
There almost certainly was. Yeah. He told another great story. Him and Trevor Brooking at the World Cup in Japan, Korea. And they couldn't find anywhere to watch one of the island matches. For whatever reason, they couldn't find anywhere open that had the game on. And they noticed a sort of TV tuned to a different channel in this closed cafe.
Yeah.
Just tiny little cafe. I think they're in Japan. So they kind of knocked on the door of this cafe and kind of pointed at the telly, but she spoke no English, obviously no Japanese from their point of view. But they managed to get it understood. They managed to get her open her cafe. So him and Trev could watch, one of the island.
Fantastic.
So,
brilliant.
Yeah, he was full of some great yarns.
You should dig those out. You should dig all that out, Paul. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, as I said, in moments like this, you know.
And the show wasn't recorded, was the show?
I don't think it was, no. But, he did have some great old stories, some great old war stories, John. But I'm sure many of them were told to Sam Matterface. Yeah. So do check out the chat he had with Sam, which was on TalkSport 2 a little bit earlier on. And I'm sure you'll be able to listen again and listen to that conversation.
David, the Walsall fan's been in touch. My favourite Motti moment was his commentary of Joe Cole's volley against Sweden in the 2006 World Cup. He didn't say anything particularly memorable, but when his voice broke a little, he had that in him, didn't he? And again, his voice would sort of crack a little bit higher. When his voice broke a little during his reaction, I felt that just for a brief second, he stopped being the consummate professional and became an England fan in amazement and wonder. Yeah. A majestic goal like the rest of us. Pure magic. That, as I said, we said earlier, like a fan with a microphone, but it's hard to make it sound like that and have all those facts as well.
There was that thing, wasn't it? What he used to say that one of the bosses at the BBC said, like, Barry Davis was the kind of voice of the man in the stands and Motti was the voice of the man on the terraces.
Yeah,
and he was a bit of a breakout star, especially at the BBC, because, you know, there was a BBC way.
He came from that sort of
Barry
era, didn't he?
Came from that sort of background. Ken Walsingham, all these kinds of people. Yeah. But Motti had a bit of a regional twang, didn't he? I mean, it was that sort of thing was happening on ITV, but not a lot on the Beeb. So he was a bit of a pioneer. But I saw a little story today, Charlie, that made me think of you. Liverpool and Everton have been fined for failing to control their players in the Merseyside derby. And failing to control their players sounded like the perfect phrase for you when you play your 15-year-old lad at FIFA. Every time you play FIFA with him, you should be fined for failing to control your players.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, I'm bad. I'm bad at that. I am bad at
Eric that. Ten Hag has been trailed by the... he's been papped this week.
Has he?
He was papped. Well, he's been papped twice. Once having a bit of grub with Sir Alex Ferguson, which he openly talked about and said, you know, why would you not kind of feed into this amazing man's knowledge base when you're the Man United manager?
There,
so he always
enjoys
seeing him. But somebody also got him in Altrincham having his beard trimmed for tonight.
Well,
so he's going to look
big match, isn't it?
He's going to look well groomed.
He will,
too, Eric, when he turns that beautifully trimmed beard.
I wonder if they'll put his picture in the window of the hairdressers, all the barbers, wherever
the
he's
barbers.
Been to,
yeah,
you know,
they still do that, but they have the pictures of the.
You can look like this, or you can look like this.
One do those barbers still exist where they had a kind of a picture of someone from the 70s? If you want to have been like Patrick Mower in the Sweeney or Peter Wingard.
Yeah.
That's the look. I'm looking for a Peter Wingard. Look him up, kids.
Newton Abbott. In Newton Abbott growing up.
They've still got
Brimpsons.
Them.
Yeah, you'd still... Yeah. You'd
the old style barber.
Brimpsons, they would have pictures of people with proper flat tops. like a proper... That was their signature style. If you wanted a flat top... Yeah. You went to Brimpson's.
Right.
And that was it. And
did you ever have a flat top in Brimpson's?
I had a flat top in Brimpson's for a while,
yeah.
Very nice. And then Dave left Brimpson's.
Oh, not,
and opened,
oh, not
he opened,
Dave.
And he opened Dave's.
Oh, he opened Dave's?
He opened Dave's down the road. So you didn't know where to go for your flat top.
Barber Wars.
Did it really
did it all kick off?
Barber Wars.
did it all kick off between
kick
Dave
off.
And...
They could work symbiotically in the
Who
town.
Who was the Brimpson?
The town was big enough.
He wasn't Dave Brimpson.
I don't know. I don't know if Brimpson's is still there. I'm down there tomorrow, so I will find out. I'm on tour tomorrow.
Your tour starts, Charlie.
Let's call it a tour. It's 14 dates around the country. Built around this radio show. But we're
it's
into,
called the show?
It's called 24-Hour Pasty People.
Has it got a bit of a West Country flavour?
It's a West Country flavour, but, it's a pasty flavour.
Do you hand out free pasty? Are pasties available in the foyer?
I'm thinking about it. I thought of having a pasty van out if it was bigger.
Well, make the money on the food like a football football club.
Exactly. Outside the venue. So I owned the van. So as people came out,
oh, that's nice.
Not even the venue making the money, I'd sell the pasties.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great, Paul?
Venue wouldn't be happy with that, though, would it? If they're basically walking through the foyer, not buying their snacks there, ooh, going
pasty,
straight
out. Pasty van out there.
Yeah, I think you'll find it might be a shorter tour than 14 dates, Charlie.
Yeah, 24-hour pasty people. There are tickets around the country if you want to go for Charlie Baker Comedian or find me on Instagram. You can find me on there as well. You can find the... get some tickets from there. But it's selling out most places, so that's nice. But tomorrow, we're in Tynmouth in South Devon.
And that's a sellout.
To kick it off.
That's a sellout.
It's where I'm from, Paul.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've got...
triumphant
homecoming. I've got Torquay United fans
coming. Will you be cheered in and cheered out?
No. Torquay United fans coming. Old school friends coming. Mum and dad's friends.
It's like a private party, really.
More or less. I mean, if there's any straight... I'm looking forward to meeting the strangers in the audience.
You've also got the Torquay manager and his assistant coming tomorrow night.
They are very kindly coming.
Wow.
Tomorrow night. So Gary Johnson and Aaron Downs will be there tomorrow night. Very, very nice. They can shout at me for a change. Rubbish!
They're going to be wearing their bench coats.
I'd love that.
GJ and AD on.
It's bad. The first half's bad. Gary comes in the dressing room.
Starts throwing
teacups. Leave it alone.
Only missed
a few punchlines.
Stand up. That would be great, wouldn't it? That would be very funny.
Yeah, it should be lovely.
It does seem unlikely. So where can people, if look, people want to come and see you
Charlie
on tour.
Baker Comedian, go on there and Charlie Baker Comedy is my website, and Charlie Baker Comedian is my Instagram.
Buy tickets from there.
And I mean, Maidenhead next week.
Yeah.
Where else am I going? St. Austell. Wow. Fareham, Salford.
Oh, that'd be good.
Birmingham.
Yeah.
All over the place.
You thought you were going to be clashing with Palace Brighton at one point?
Yes, or my Brighton.
Brighton Palace.
My Brighton date, they've moved the date, actually. They've moved the match, so I'm quite pleased my Brighton date did clash with Palace Brighton. Brighton Palace.
Yes.
Sorry, which wouldn't have been great for me, if I'm honest, Paul.
No.
You know, so, but they've moved that, so yeah. The Forge in Brighton.
Excellent.
That's a nice date, yeah.
All right, Charlie, I'm going to come and see you on tour. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Well, very nice. Thank you very much. That's good. We asked the undercard for the boxing, Paul.
Yeah.
Didn't we?
What the undercard is.
Craig from Bradford's been in touch. Rebecca Vardy versus Colleen Rooney, of course.
Oh, we don't watch that.
Piers Morgan v Jeremy Clarkson.
Yeah.
Be nice. And then Sue Pollard v Julian Clary. I mean, we had Sue in the other week.
You wanted it to be celebrity based.
She had quite a right hook.
Yes, you look very good. So there we are.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. Charlie starts his tour tomorrow, so... he's not with me, but making his first appearance as a co-presenter, someone who's always a great guest on the show, is Sam Avery.
Excellent.
Evertonian comedian, podcaster, lovely guy.
Very nice chap. They're always funny, so I think he'll be great, Paul.
Yeah, looking forward
to
seeing
Sam. Not too
good, I hope. You know, we'll have Stan Collymore joining us. Lots of top guests, as always, building up to the rugby and the football and more at the weekend. Do hope you can join us for one. If not, the podcast will be available around 4.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.